and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a just-released poll in Michigan, a state that Trump won narrowly, that found 53% of respondents are either very or somewhat worried that Donald Trump has access to the nuclear codes, with 43% believing the president is not mentally stable, while 12% are undecided on the question of his mental fitness. Dr. Alan Francis, a professor emeritus and former chair of psychiatry and behavioral science at Duke University, joins us to discuss his new book, Twilight of American Sanity. A psychiatrist analyzes the age of Trump and the question of whether Trump is mentally ill or is just a horrible, hateful person. He will also offer a broader diagnosis of the sanity of America itself, a society in which Trump was not only considered a plausible candidate, but was elected President of the United States in spite of his manifest flaws and appalling history. Then we'll examine the futility of the U.S. relying on China to solve the nuclear standoff with North Korea in light of the recent provocation of an H-bomb test coinciding with President Xi's opening of the BRICS summit in China and his meeting with Putin that were upstaged by Kim Jong-un's insult and insolence. James Acton, co-director of the Nuclear Policy Program and a senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and author of Abolishing Nuclear Weapons, joins us to discuss what other options exist to avoid an escalating nuclear crisis between the U.S. and North Korea. Then finally, we'll look into what legal remedies are available at the state level to reverse the rescinding of DACA by Trump and Sessions, and speak with Kamal Esaheb, an immigration policy attorney at the National Immigration Law Center. We will discuss the lawsuit filed on Wednesday by 14 states and the District of Columbia against Trump's decision and how a similar argument is at play as there was in overturning Trump's Muslim ban, which was based on evidence from Trump himself, who made racist statements against Muslim, as he has often done, hurling racist insults at Latinos. And joining us now is Dr. Alan Francis, who's a professor emeritus and former chair of psychiatry and behavioral science at Duke University. He is the author of the award-winning international bestseller Saving Normal and the reference work Essentials of Psychiatric Diagnosis. And his latest book just out is Twilight of American Sanity, A Psychiatrist Analyzes the Age of Trump. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Alan Francis.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
And Dr. Francis, I take it the distinction between Donald Trump and the age of Donald Trump is an important one, in as much as while a lot of people are questioning Donald Trump's mental health, one could, as you do in your book, question the mental health of our entire American society, because this is society in which Donald Trump was not only a plausible candidate, he became president of the United States, for God's sake.
I like everything that you said except plausible candidate. I'd say he was more an implausible candidate and a remarkably destructive president. I think not only our worst, but probably the biggest threat to American democracy since the Civil War. Yeah, I started writing this book 2 years before Trump threw his hat in the ring, and was very concerned that the world that we're handing on to our children and grandchildren is likely to be much worse than the one that we received. Then Trump came on the scene and turned all of what I call societal delusions into, he put them all on speed. And everything that was going wrong before is now exponentially worse than I imagined it could be. The good news is that this may hopefully be temporary American insanity, and that Trump could be a gift horse in disguise, that a kind of shock treatment, that by being such a grotesque representative of all of the worst possible policies, hopefully he will serve to discredit them.
Well, I meant to say he was considered a plausible candidate, not that he was a plausible candidate. But I think, though, there's a little preface, surely, to Donald Trump's this anomaly in American politics. It's not entirely an anomaly when you consider that Sarah Palin was a kind of precursor. And my sense is that what happened with Palin and has been compounded with Trump is that there's a change in America away from a sense of meritocracy. And the idea is now, because perhaps people are not that well educated, that people can now vote for people that are just like them, as opposed to people they consider to be more qualified than they are.
Well, there's been a strain in American politics that goes back to the, the age of Jackson, just after the first founding fathers, of a kind of American know-nothingism. Mm-hmm. It's not new. We've had a paranoid strain in our history that has been well described by Richard Hofstadter 40 years ago. And we've lived through McCarthyism. We've lived through the John Birch Society. Yes, we lived through Sarah Palin. I think that what's unique now is that the president of the United States is giving a bully pulpit to all the things that are worst in America. And while we've had fringe movements forever that might be execrable in their pronouncements and their policies, and often enough to take the Ku Klux Klan and their behavior, we've never had a legitimization of the worst angels in American life by the leader of the country. We've turned America into a reality TV show. I think Trump was elected largely because of his skill in attracting attention to his every movement, his every saying, his every tweet. And we've brought out, I guess the Internet has given us the greatest availability of knowledge unimaginable in human history, but hasn't brought with it a similar accumulation of wisdom, and that the best trends and the worst trends can become quickly amplified and travel around the world in seconds. I think it's time for us to see Trump as a mirror on our soul. The reflection back is pretty ugly, but that there's a lot more to America than what he represents. He's a minority president, and his popularity is appropriately shrinking rapidly. I think we have to figure out what went wrong in our society and start curing it.
And again, I'm speaking with Dr. Alan Francis, who is a professor emeritus and former chair of psychiatry and behavioral science at Duke University. He's the author of the award-winning international bestseller Saving Normal and the reference work Essentials of Psychiatric Diagnosis. And his latest book just out is Twilight of American Sanity, A Psychiatrist Analyzes the Age of Trump. So there is something out there in the zeitgeist, though, in terms of questions about Donald Trump's mental health and mental stability. I know your book is also diagnosing the broader issue of America's mental stability to have elected this guy, or at least a minority of Americans to have elected him. But just to touch on Trump himself, a poll was just done in Michigan that finds 53% of Michiganders are worried about Donald Trump's access to the nuclear codes. And they question his authority to launch nuclear weapons with considering questions about his mental state. And it particularly relates to North Korea, or the current tensions over North Korea, where this poll found that the Trump threatening North Korea with fire and fury led to 38% of respondents saying that they are very worried about nuclear war and about Trump's access to the nuclear codes, and 15% said that they were somewhat worried. So there's something happening there. Now, I would have thought that the Democrats weren't so brain dead. It'd be very easy to tie these two things together, that you've got Senator Corker, Republican chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, questioning Trump's stability, which is, I think, implies mental stability. You got this poll in Michigan. This ought to be a real national debate, whether the president of the United States that we have now in the Oval Office is a fit and sober and responsible steward of the nuclear codes, where at his fingertips, Donald Trump has the ability to destroy the world.
Yeah, and what a world it is when you have two idiots like Trump and Kim able to create such mayhem without anyone blocking either one of them. I think that Trump's evil and instability together have the useful purpose of finding the weaknesses, the vulnerabilities in our democracy. It should never have been that one person decided whether we would establish this cataclysmic nuclear war. based on that person's individual preferences and feelings of the moment. It always should have been a much more institutional decision. The Constitution says that we mustn't declare war except with Congress's approval. And that's been honored in the breach in the last 50 years of many undeclared wars. I think what Trump represents is an opportunity to take advantage of his grotesque behavior to build institutional safeguards. Congress has just reconvened. I'd say the first order of business is not a tax cut to the rich. The first order of business should be containing the risks presented by this president. There should be legislation that makes clear that there's a joint decision about starting a nuclear war that's not just in the hands of the president. We don't want one morning to awake and find out that instead of tweeting peevishly, he decided to tell a general to press the button. There should be a clear mandate that the president get approval from Congress before starting a war. That's implicit, but it's been decided in the past. We shouldn't allow that to happen in the future. The solution to Trump's bad behavior is political, and it rests largely in the hands politically of the Congress and of the Supreme Court, and it has been very much the job of the free press to contradict and point out all the lies that daily fill Trump's tweets and his news briefings. So I guess the point I'm making here is that the solution to Trump is political. It's not psychological. It's not saying that he's crazy and therefore we should put in these institutional protections. He's just a bad person, an incompetent person, in way over his head, ignorant, serving his own interests, not the larger interests of the country, of the world, or of future generations. He's absolutely the worst possible choice as president. He's always been like this. There's never been a moment in Trump's life when he hasn't been a spoiled brat. He's immature. We should see him as someone in a perpetual terrible twos. Almost everything he does is wrong and bad, but that doesn't make him mentally ill. We shouldn't confuse bad behavior with mental illness. It's highly insulting to the mentally ill. Most of them are really nice people and don't do bad things. It's highly insulting to them to be lumped with Trump. And it underestimates the evil he can do to assume that this is all craziness. Much of what he does is crazy like a fox.
Well, I'm reminded of Senator John Danforth, former Republican senator and UN representative. He recently made a statement calling upon his fellow Republican senators to save the GOP from this hateful man. So some people are stepping up, even within the Republican ranks. But what you've just suggested, which should be a national priority, and this is the first thing that the House and Senate should be working on, which is putting a barrier between Trump and the nuclear button. There's some comfort taken by the generals around him, but they don't have the authority to stop him. So what you just said is, to my mind, should be a national priority. So why isn't it?
Why is it not?
Yeah, what's the problem here?
I think, the problem is that we have a Congress that is cynical in the extreme and has the wish to ride Trump to things like ridiculous tax cuts for the rich, to destroying Obamacare and the coverage it provided for ordinary people. So we have the combination of 40 years' worth of propaganda to the people, of congressional redistricting and gerrymandering and enormous contributions that have created a Congress that's irresponsible, that's radical in the extreme. Trump is grotesque, but the Congress itself, the Republican Congress, is radical in the extreme. And their cynicism in trying to ride him to their own Coke agenda. I think that the what's happened because Trump is so divisive, a more skillful politician like Pence would have been much more dangerous than Trump is, and could be more dangerous in the long run than Trump is, because he could tie together the most obscenely despicable parts of the Republican base with the more selfish and cynical parts, but less obviously grotesque. What Trump has done is divide the Republican Party into a portion that's really, John Birch, off the wall, non-Republican, absolutely extremist, And that base, which may ultimately be maybe 20 to 30% of the general population and maybe half of the Republican Party, because after the president's strategy, they've actually gone after that base very aggressively. That base is crucial to the Republicans' governing coalition. And if they lose that base, they become a splintered, fragmented party. So I think that they're doing everything possible to postpone the reckoning. And they're choosing politics over patriotism. The loyalty to the party, their power, their donors, the Koch brothers, is more important to most of the hacks in the Republican Congress than actually doing what's right for the country. And the Democrats, as you point out, are weak in victory and absolutely pathetic in defeat. They don't have the skill, the propaganda skills. When you're telling the truth, sometimes it's hard to be good at telling it. But if you know you're lying, you develop the very greatest in public relations propaganda skills to be able to pass off the lie. The Democrats are consistently suggesting the right thing, but suggesting in just the wrong way to capture the public imagination.
Well, so many Democrats and people who are alarmed by Trump are counting on impeachment as opposed to coming up with a narrative. If an election was held today, I think the Republicans would win in the absence of a counter-narrative. But when you talk about Trump, that it's an insult to the mentally ill to refer to Trump as being mentally ill because he's just a bad and horrible person. That seems to be something that's becoming so evident. I'm astounded that people can't connect the dots here. This is a man who has made so many overtures to Nazis, white supremacists, that it's almost impossible not to assume that both he and Jeff Sessions and Stephen Miller are white nationalists. And particularly Sessions' case and Trump's case, they hate Latinos. Trump started his campaign by talking about Latinos as rapists and murderers. He blamed Hillary Clinton's victory in the popular vote, winning by 3 million, on Latino undocumented voters, these mythical people, only in his diseased imagination tipped the scales. And of course, he won the presidency in any case. But, I mean, I could go on, you know, Joe Arpaio running concentration camps and rounding up Latinos like the Gestapo rounded up Jews. I mean, when are we going to start a real dialogue about who this guy really is?
Well, also, he's always been this way. There's nothing new about this. His first entry into real estate was greeted by a federal lawsuit because the buildings he and his father were managing refused to accept black tenants. He's been a racist from the get-go. And the person he hired, his mentor in conspiracy theory, was Roy Cohn, who was the brains behind Joseph McCarthy's witch trials in the 50s. And Roy Cohn made him an expert in attacking your opponent as opposed to defending yourself and making up stories. The idea of fake news goes back to Roy Cohn and McCarthy 60-odd years ago. The things that we see in Trump now that are increasingly disgraceful and hard to imagine have been part and parcel of his entire career. There's nothing new here. The Trump of the campaign is the Trump of the presidency. And what seemed reasonable to some people as reality TV in the process of considering his candidacy should begin to be clearly disastrous to almost all in the president. And I think that his base is, he has a solid core of people, I'm not sure, maybe 20% of the population, who, is, as he put it, would still vote for him even if he shot someone in the middle of the day on Fifth Avenue. So there are some people who are absolutely wedded to the Trump brand no matter what. His TV fans, the white racists, the anti-Semites, the Nazis, he will have a solid core of people that will go down with the ship. But I think a lot of people will have second guesses about Trump and begin to have buyer's remorse about having made a terrible mistake. I think that patriots love their country have to worry about a president who prefers Putin to his own national intelligence agencies. I think people who are losing their medical coverage are going to be beginning to wonder whether he really represented them in the election. I think the little guy who's economically disfavored by the inequality, I've seen that inequality in America, is not going to be too happy about the tax cuts that Trump will the giveaways he'll be giving to the super rich and to the corporations. And I think that anyone who doesn't like Nazis and realizes we fought a war to stop Nazism is not going to be too happy about a president who seems to endorse them, the white supremacists and the anti-Semites. And finally, most puzzling, it's hard for me to understand anyone who's truly religious supporting Donald Trump. The Jesus and Donald Trump are diametric opposites. Jesus was someone who always preached for the poor and defended them against the depredations of the rich. The rich would have trouble getting into heaven as much as a camel getting through the eye of a needle. Kicked the moneylenders out of the temple. He would not be voting for Donald Trump. Jesus lived in the Roman Empire that had lots of abortion and gay love that was very prominent, and never once in the New Testament ever said a thing about gay love or abortion. He constantly spoke about religious hypocrites, and it was unforgiving about them. I don't think that the evangelical leaders who sold their souls to devilish Trump, I don't think they represent real Christianity. I'm hopeful that increasingly their followers will come to realize that Trump is a false prophet. So my guess is that we're going to see a gradual but steady desertion of Trump's base, and before very long, he's going to be very much alone. I'm afraid he may be impeached. I think that, you know, you don't burn your bridges, and he certainly has been incredibly insulting towards the two people who would most determine whether he's impeached or not, McConnell in the Senate and Ryan in the House. I think that he's taken every person who might have helped him towards a saner administration. He's consistently wound up betraying their loyalty and blaming them for his problems. And my guess is it's going to be like King Richard, you know, my kingdom for a horse, that at some point Donald Trump will be so isolated that the Republican Party will see it in their cynical best interest to get rid of him rather than to continue to try to hold together what's essentially an untenable coalition. And I'm actually not pleased by that. I mean, I'd rather have, so long as there's no nuclear war and no impulsive international disaster, I'd rather have Trump be the grotesque face of the Koch brothers' Tea Party policies than smoother people like Pence and Ryan who could sell a bill of goods much more successfully.
Well, just in closing, you mentioned that Trump is way out of his depth, which is clearly the case. And I see him as a very frightened man who is deeply incompetent. Somewhere in his dark soul, he knows that he's not up for the job, and he lashes out all the time, and he pretends, and he has these sort of photo opportunities and all this bluster and nonsense and these pathetic stunts, as opposed to governing, that he becomes a serial activity of his. And he watches all the time his reviews, he watches TV. He doesn't. It's like an actor who doesn't. It's not interested in the performance, but only interested in the reviews. It's a very strange situation. But as he gets more isolated and delusional, he's just lost apparently his emotional anchor. This Keith Schiller, former personal bodyguard turned director of the Oval Office operations, who could wander in and out of the Oval Office at will. Many people see him as his closest confidant, perhaps Trump's only friend. So with the loss of Schiller, if indeed Schiller was his emotional anchor, and General Kelly trying to bring some discipline, and most analysts think that there'll be an explosion between Trump and Kelly, who Trump can't stand already, and there might even be some kind of a meltdown because he won't have this kind of bodyguard thug friend around to whisper in his ear like Rasputin, that Trump himself might have a meltdown.
It's certainly possible. I think, first of all, let's not call him delusional. To be delusional, you have to have a fixed false belief that can't be contradicted by obvious reality, and it has to be personal. Trump's a conspiracy theorist, but he has been his whole life, and so are almost half of Americans. If 35% of the people believe your conspiracy theory, you're no longer delusional. So he's dangerous. As a conspiracy theorist, he's divorced from reality in many issues. That doesn't make him mentally ill. Yeah, I think that it's perfectly conceivable that he can come apart at the seams under the stress of the real burdens of the office and the man-made incompetence in his exercise of it. And we don't know that we've seen the worst of him. That's why I think that before we see more troubles, we have to create political institutions to protect us from his worst depredations. But I don't think it helps to psychoanalyze him and to worry so much about his motivations. I think he is one of the most transparent people who ever lived. His psychology is not very interesting because it's so obvious. I think the goal is to figure out systematic ways of protecting the nation from Donald Trump. And this will be much better done by a deliberation in Congress than it will be done by a bunch of psychologists giving him name-calling that he has this diagnosis or that diagnosis. So we shouldn't let the interest in Trump's personality, the kind of reality show of what did he say next, what will he do next, the distraction that comes from all of us glued to the screen to see what outrageous last act. We have to not focus so much on that, but assume the worst for the future, that there's nothing stupid that Trump can't do, and we have to figure out ways of protecting against his impulses.
Well, Dr. Alan Francis, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Well, thank you.
And again, I've been speaking with Dr. Alan Francis, who is a professor emeritus and former chair of psychiatry and behavioral science at Duke University. He's the author of the award-winning international bestseller Saving Normal and the reference work Essentials of Psychiatric Diagnosis. And his latest book just out is Twilight of American Sanity, A Psychiatrist Analyzes the Age of Trump. We're going to take a brief station break and back, examining the futility of the U.S. relying on China to solve the nuclear standoff with North Korea.